Button. No.
Hi, welcome to today's ILTA podcast entitled The Simple Plan for Career Development, Supporting Women That Inspire Change in the Legal Industry. My name is Rebecca Holdridge, and I am the Innovation Manager at Hush Blackwell, a full-service law firm with about 800 attorneys. I'll be your moderator today. I am thrilled to be joined by our speaker, Lucy Vasley, founder and principal of Inno Legal Services. Lucy is an attorney and author of The Simple Guide to Legal Innovation and former Assistant General Counsel of Legal Operations and Contracting at Microsoft. Welcome, Lucy.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Since we've got a lot to cover and not a ton of time, let's dive right in. Given the legal industry's gender gap, how did you reach your level of success and what role have women leaders played in your career growth?
Oh my God, we can just fill up the whole time on this one question. I'm gonna try to keep it really simple. You know, what contributed, I think, to my where I got to, and I hope it's successful. I certainly feel that way. Most of it, frankly, I think it's perseverance. So that regardless of the challenges, whether gender related or, you know, or otherwise or whatever they are, right? It's so much is about the self driving and the initiative. That is always my general sum, right? The bias for action, the seizing opportunity, the identifying opportunity, the creating opportunities, which works really well into, of course, topics of innovation, which you and I are passionate about, because you got to kind of want to do something different. You got to push through. So I would say that's the general theme, which applies to, of course, men and women. That is not a gender thing. Now, what role have women played in my journey? It's going to be probably, you know, this is not my favorite answer. Unfortunately, it hasn't been as big of a role as I wish it would have. And I say that because I want to be honest, completely honest. I've had some great men as mentors, and that has been really good. And they were also mentors knowing and aware of the gender gap, right? So they weren't just mentors substantively. They were mentors in the, hey, you know, that wasn't a good meeting. And they talked to you that way because I think you're a woman, right? To hear a man say that as a boss. Those were very, very important things that helped kind of usher me along in certain areas. I will say the role that some of the women that I do perceive as really inspirational, influential, the role they played is, if anything, they gave me something to look forward to, right? To achieve and to aspire. Even if they weren't my mentors or my personal, you know, sponsors, I feel like I always was seeking role models, even from a distance, right? Just people that I can admire or emulate or watch how they behave or how they get things done. So although I can't say I have the most amazing, perfect story, you know, for me personally in my, you know, career, I think there are a number of women in the legal profession who we can all look up to and whom over time, as I grew in my work and in my career and it expanded, I was able to make their contacts, right? So we ended up becoming a little bit more acquainted, and then I had a little bit more of a personal access, right, to them, and felt a little bit, you know, more of that direct sponsorship and mentorship. So my role, I think, frankly, reflects probably a lot of women though.
Agreed. Yeah. Well, you and you mentioned the two terms sponsor and mentor. How do you define the difference between the two of those, and how do you find one, or what if you can't find one?
Yep, and I said them intentionally separately. I always do, and they are quite different. And I actually learned that hands on for myself. When again, I had one example in my mind, right? A really good boss, who was a great mentor in terms of teaching me not just the skills I needed from a substantive side, but also maneuvering, guiding through complicated work situations. I mean, so that was fantastic. Sponsorship, though, as opposed to mentorship, is where that person, your sponsor, proactively nudges you forward, I think, in the view of others. So there's sponsoring also that's kind of a mentoring plus, I would say. I think that there's a mentoring, there's a kind of mentoring plus. Mentoring can be very, you know, reactive, responsive, come to me with questions, I'll always help you. And that's nice. I'm going to call that the easy version of mentoring. Then there's mentoring plus, which is like, hey, go do that. Hey, did you see that? Go chase that. I think you'd be good at that, right? So that's kind of like, yes, that's really good mentoring. And then there's sponsoring. And sponsoring is being in a room full of people and the sponsor speaking up on behalf of someone and saying, this person needs to be given a shot. This person should try this. I suggest this person. I recommend that person. You know, when someone's asking for volunteers, being kind of going, calling out that there's somebody else there that should be doing some. So sponsorship is a more proactive. It's putting your name really behind somebody else. That to me, sponsorship.
Wow, I love that. I love that definition. I think we all know that in order to be a good leader, you need to be able to communicate effectively. And most experts agree that the most productive way to do that is through honest and transparent dialogue. For those women that feel like they struggle with assertive communication, either too passively or too aggressively, which I know I have that struggle as well. You know, what suggestions can you give to them?
Oh gosh, I wish I knew what it was like to struggle with honest communication. I think for women who don't struggle it, we have enough challenge as those who do, right? Because we've seen all the research on women who are proactive, transparent, honest, crisp with their communication. We get called names and they're not the positive, encouraging names that men get called. Oh, assertive. That's great. No, you know, we get called other names. There's enough research on that. I won't go into that. So on that regard, we're almost taught to, hey, woo, you're sounding a little, you know, dot, 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 fill in the blank. I've never really heard most men being worried about that. Now, the other side, which is, of course, to your question, not that I'm trying to rewrite your questions, but to your question was about those who struggle with the being assertive. I think that is where good sponsorship and mentorship really helps. I mean, it won't change, but you can't just by yourself suddenly make yourself more comfortable. Of course, you have to think through, okay, I've got to get out of my comfort zone. You have to first become self-aware. You have to stop and wonder, God, I really had a different idea. Or I don't think that was the right decision that was made in that meeting. Why didn't I speak up? Like, so you do have to stop and reflect and wonder why. Is it an institutional problem? Did I not speak up because I will be reprimanded or I will be sidelined or I will be later made to pay for it? You know, like some unwritten, unstated scenario that you're afraid of. Those are problems that are hard to fix because they're not your problem. Now, if you're in a very supportive environment that is very engaging, that genuinely rewards, you know, creative thinking and rewards conversation and growth mindset and all that good, healthy stuff, then it is self-reflection. And I think then it is having to, you know, forcing yourself to get out of the comfort zone. No different than, I don't know, somebody who's afraid of nature that's going to force themselves on a hike. You know, you kind of have to do that. But I would definitely seek out, you know, colleagues, other women that you could share with and get a little, you know, oomph and a comfort behind you. I think that always helps.
Well, on a separate note, I have another question about imposter syndrome, which, you know, I hear a lot about that these days. You know, how do you define that? And what advice do you have to combat it?
So I define imposter syndrome, and I find myself doing this every other day, where I'm in a call and I kind of want to go, do they really think I know all this stuff? That's amazing. And then I catch myself going, oh yeah, cause I do. but I think imposter syndrome is feeling that, you know, you're not good enough or you're kind of faking it till you make it or, allowing other people to perceive you as maybe more capable than you yourself think you are. I think that's imposter syndrome in my mind, I believe. I'm sure there are other more eloquent definitions. The thing about it that's interesting is some of it is a little healthy, right? Or else there are ego problems we see out there, or there's capability problems that we see, right? And we're like, wow, that person has no idea what they're doing. How did they possibly get into this situation? So I think a little dose of it is probably it's healthy. It has to be measured though, right? I think it brings humility. That's kind of what I think of as the healthy part. The way to get over it, I think, you got to figure out at some point what you're worth. And that's a journey that most women take way later in our careers. I feel like I'm just kind of now getting there and getting confident and comfortable because I hear other people tell me, don't sell yourself short. Don't underestimate yourself. Don't sell yourself short. I hear that all the time. And I've heard it actually from men, male mentors and kind of leaders that have been kind enough to simply go, what? Don't sell yourself short. Don't, just as they sprinkle these few words as kind of a, oh, and have a nice day. They really mean it. To me, it's so big and important, right? And heavy kind of to hear that. So, I mean, the way to get over it is to start really appreciating the value you bring. And for those who don't appreciate that value in you, they're going to be in the minority. And that means you might miss something or lose an opportunity or something might not work out the way you would have wanted if you hadn't been that confident in your capability and skills. Maybe somebody out there didn't value it. But that's in the minority. That someone will be one compared to the dozens or hundreds, depending on the work you're in, that do. So opt for assuming that they're valuing you, right? Opt for assuming that you're worth it. What's the worst thing that'll happen as opposed to the other? It is much, much worse to sell yourself short. Not only, of course, from your career trajectory and financially or rewards or any of that, I'm talking about selling yourself short and never for yourself having that amazing feeling of feeling really good about what you do, really feeling good and proud of it.
Well, I can't lie. There's been times when I feel like the little engine that could like fake it till you make it, fake it till you make it, fake it till you make it. So I love that. I love that
We
advice.
all do. We all do. Everybody does.
Well, to give everybody a little bit more context, like tell us about a recent setback you've had and how did you recover from it? And how can women build their inner resilience?
Oh my goodness. Look, we have them all the time. Sometimes they're little, sometimes they're big. I mean, 3 years ago, when I chose to leave my dream job at Microsoft, it was a huge decision that somehow part of me almost thought, did I, was that a setback because I didn't stick through it? Was obviously I was chasing other bigger, exciting things, but we can't let ourselves just enjoy journeys. We for some reason always have to bring the kind of the heavier, the what ifs, the could have, would have, should haves. And I think that's a heavy anchor that a lot of people bear. I think a lot of women bear that too. Again, we tend to overanalyze a little bit more, right? And I know there's some research on this, right? And I'm not as elegant on the research for sure, eloquent, I should say. But I think kind of the letting go, the jumping in that is so often associated with successful men, right? The risk taking, I think that is something that we need to embrace more, make it our own it, and really just do like our male counterparts do. I'm trying to think of, a very specific, setback. How would I describe it? Okay. So there's definitely a setback I had, that, you know what, it just took me by surprise and something didn't go the way, I had planned. And I thought, what could I have done differently? Of course. Right. Again. And I am always thinking about what I could have done differently. And I think the one thing I learned from that is A, it was out of my control. There actually was very little I could have done differently. And I started going down the path of, well, if I would have behaved differently, if I would have acted differently, right? And it was a very substantive decision, but you I think women, again, tend to go to the, well, what, there's all these other things that are happening, right? We tend to not think of like, well, obviously, black and white, and this happened, and that this was the result. And it became very much personal. Why me? Why did it happen to me? Would that have happened to somebody else? Did that with that same situation? And so, the way I bounced back is I really leaned in on what I used to always tell my own team. And I feel like I wasn't living it in that moment. And I was always saying, you know, we lead with substance and quality. That was always my little team thing. And Microsoft, the team I built, and now my new team that I'm building in my own firm, we lead with substance and quality, right? It's not the, oh, who do we know that's going to open these doors, and how are we going to sneak through this or get by that, right? It was always, no, the deliverables are top notch. The quality's there, the substance is there. And that helped me kind of overcome that and go, you know what? Is what it is. I'm going to keep doing what I know how to do, because 99% of the time that's worked for me. So that setback, just out of my control. And that's really hard to accept, right? The whole control thing is another issue that some of us deal with, certainly the legal profession and women or working moms, you know, forget it. We've got that cornered. So I would say kind of just that the letting go of that, of the setback, that thing, why the mulling, the, oh, what could I, well, I hate it. I still think about it. Well, it makes me uncomfortable. Well, it's done. It's in the past. It's wrong. So that, you know, still working on that.
Can't say that I gotten over the overanalyzing piece. So, but I love the substance and quality. I lean on that. I know a lot of women can do some amazing things. So if they just remember that, I think that's great advice.
We do. We need to make sure it's recognized. I will say, right, just delivering is also a hole that women fall into, that we deliver really well and we'll just get more stuff sent to us and landed on us because we deliver really well. And we sometimes undervalue ourselves, and it creates a really dangerous spiral to get into, because gosh, so good. God, Rebecca, so she always gets it done. Rebecca's so good. Rebecca never asks for more money. Rebecca never, you know, rocks the boat too much. She just gets it done what I give her, right? And I'm definitely not picking on you because you're an innovator. So I know that can't be all applicable, what I just said to you. But I think there are women who just leading with substance and quality isn't enough usually for us. So you also have to speak up, speak out. You do have to push some buttons. You do have to have some uncomfortable conversations. You do have to demand what you deserve. All of that has to be layered on top. So the substance of quality, I never want that to be the only message. That was how I had to remind myself to get over that one setback. But to really get ahead, to get the sponsorship, to get the mentorship, you gotta push. You just do. Just doing good stuff quietly is not, it's not enough. We're just gonna continue to get underpaid and have to over deliver.
Well, I love that, like, leads right into my next question. If there's a woman out there with big aspirations to change the industry, but feels she's not on the right career trajectory. Like, for example, she's in a position where she's not being challenged, or maybe, as you just suggested, she's overlooked. What advice can you give her on career management? And, you know, what are those signs that you've seen that, she needs to stay, or maybe she needs to go?
Yeah. So that's the first, again, realization probably goes back to so many of these other themes that we've touched on, right? Self-worth. You don't have to stay where you're unhappy. You just don't. I'm going to speak in some very general terms, and not everybody's in the same position. But typically, if you are in the legal profession, right, if you're at a certain place in a particular role, in a function, you have options. Most of the professionals who are watching this webinar, they will have options. I am not talking to the entire world of all workers in the United States. I'm talking about the legal profession. Women, you have options. Please don't stay where you're not happy. Whatever happy means, by the way, whatever happy means, this whole like, oh, you know, the job, well, on Monday morning, got to go to the job. Nobody should ever feel that way. Nobody. You should go into work excited about the work you're doing. Not because every job is perfect. I'm not crazy. I might sound it, but you should enjoy the bulk of your work. And if you're not challenged, find a way to be challenged. If you love the company or firm you're in, but your particular role isn't challenging. Find another role in that same place. If you're in a good company and you're comfortable and enjoy, you know, everything the company stands for, find another job, find another role, connect yourself with somebody who might have a project you can lean into. That's great. And I say lean into carefully because I know time is money and money's not, and time doesn't isn't unending, but you're going to have to make some compromises. So find the time to do that project because that might be the one that sets you off on a different trajectory. And then seek a network outside of that place that will help you give ideas and opportunities. I have to say, and I do not get paid by LinkedIn, LinkedIn's been amazing at not just developing a professional network, which is great. It's been kind of just supporting one that I think I was already had, but I have found some of the best people on my newly developing team through LinkedIn. That right there is one just super tactical, simple example, right? Read up on topics that are interesting, comment on them, reach out to people who say things that you find interesting and ask them for a 15-minute chat so you can learn more, but you have to be proactive. All those things I just described, none of that will magically come to you. It will not, especially not innovative type of things. If you want to do something creative, you're going to have to make it your own. You just are going to have to. That I almost guarantee. So seek it out. Talk to people like Rebecca, like me. I'm volunteering both of us anytime because there's ton of opportunity out there. And it looks different from nonprofit to big corp to big law, right, to starting your own place. There's a million things you can do that I think will be fulfilling if you're not happy where you are today.
So you talked about happiness and trade-offs. So here's the big question. Is work-life balance really possible, in your opinion?
Work-life integration is possible. It's possible when you love what you do. Just had this conversation with my husband yesterday, 2 days ago. I was like, doing some more. Yeah, oh, Sunday, of course. Sunday morning. I was like, what a perfect Sunday morning. I was right here on my deck. We had nice, calm music playing. I was having coffee. Kids were around. I had my laptop. And I was getting some work done. It was the perfect Sunday morning for me. But that's because I've created my world of work-life integration that works for me. So you have to go to places that are going to support the kind of work-life integration that works for you. And if it isn't about integration and it's balance, I want to clock in and clock out virtually or you know, whatever, mentally. That's okay too. There are jobs like that in the legal profession where you can clock in and you clock out, and that's okay too. And then you're not integrating, you are balancing. I think it's possible. It's not going to be, you can't have the 100% life experience, which means I can pick up and go wherever I want, anytime I want, have 20 kids all around me that I raise personally myself and homeschool, and have a fulfilling legal career. That is probably not possible. So you're going to have to adjust the definition of both to have the best version, I think, of both. But I'd say some of us have found a way to have pretty close to it. Got my dog making a guest appearance even. I mean, come on. How can this not be the best work-life integration? She's about to bark and it's like, ooh, look, time. Perfect timing. Oof.
Well, we're almost out of time, but I wanted to wrap up with one final question.
Yeah.
What's the most important leadership lesson you've learned?
Oh God, I don't think I've learned this one yet. When to keep my mouth shut. I am pretty self-aware enough to know that I have not quite yet learned that lesson, though it keeps trying all the time. For those of us who have no trouble being outspoken, sometimes there are times to keep it inside, right? Listening is probably the most important leadership lesson. I'm trying to learn it and get better at it. I watch other leaders do it very well. And it's not passive listening. It's true listening. It is, it's extremely powerful. It's extremely rewarding. And it helps build entire, you know, teams and layers of people around when they're being heard. So I think listening.
Wow. I love that. Well, thank you very much to the audience for tuning in today to today's podcast. And I want to extend my thanks again to Lucy for taking the time to join us. Have a wonderful day, everyone.
My pleasure. Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Rebecca.